kick off the second hour of the show, though, by getting on board the G&M Family Market telephone line and bringing on board the sports columnist emeritus of the Boston Globe, Bob Ryan. Bob, good afternoon.
Hi, Rich.
How are you this fine day?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Let's start with a little baseball talk, Bob, and the Pete Rose situation, a Commissioner Rob Manfred deciding not to reinstate him. Do you believe that was the right decision for baseball?
Well, right decision to make positively, because he can't be trusted, Pete. You can't be trusted. Nothing has changed since 1989 when Bart Giamatti issued the edict and he signed the ban himself, which is, though he may love baseball as much or more than any man alive or dead, he likes gambling more. And he still gambles, and he still frequents, as we say in the Baltimore Catechism, the occasions of sin in this regard, okay? And therefore, you cannot possibly. And he lied to Rob Manfred when he first was asked about betting on baseball as a player, then came back and quote-unquote clarified it. I love that word, clarified it. In other words, he admitted he lied. And you can't trust him. He has not changed. He's incorrigible. And I think he's quite happy in his own skin. He likes what he does. He would like to be in the Hall of Fame, but is it the most important thing in his life to which he would move heaven and earth and be a good boy and drink his milk at the bottom of the glass and look both ways before crossing? And no, it's not. Gambling is the most important thing in his life.
And for making money, which also seems to be pretty high on his list, it might well be that being on the outside looking in is a better thing for him financially.
That's been suggested. I didn't read things today. I saw headlines leading the stories to that effect, which I will finally catch up with at some point. But I don't doubt it. We know that he signs anything and everything for money. And we know what, and not just at Cooperstown and during All-Star Weekend, which is shameful, but shameless, but that's him. No, he lives in Vegas. He lives a Vegas life. He's a shameless person. He's a huckster. He's a scam artist. He's a con man. And he's the man with the most hits in baseball history. That's just the complete package.
Bob, you wrote recently about casting your Hall of Fame ballot, and you're still not at the point where you're ready to welcome in with open arms those who were clear violators of substance abuse policies.
No, I know. I mean, it's probably stupid, Rich, because really and truly, it's just a vain, hopeless attempt to be a guardian of the gate. And I really am probably very foolish in trying to do it. But I still don't think it should be our responsibility to make the judgment. I blame the Hall of Fame itself. I think the Hall of Fame should take charge of this and be willing to do the following. I've said this many times. I'll say it again. Issue a disclaimer as you enter the hall where the plaques are, something to the effect that there are people in here who have heavy accusations, some heavier than others, of use of performance-enhancing drugs. It might disturb your appreciation of what they did, but we felt we have to honor their accomplishments. You are free to feel however you want about them, but we feel that we had to allow them to be voted in on the merits of their record and their accomplishments. Now, if somebody wants to walk up to a plaque and issue the finger, I would stop short of spitting, but go ahead, fine. But if they would do that, I will vote them all in. Take it off us. It's their hall. Now, this is what people have to understand. The same thing with Pete Rose. Pete Rose is not eligible for the Hall of Fame because the Hall of Fame, a private institution that is not directly run by or connected with Major League Baseball, has chosen to adopt a policy by which those people who are on the ineligible list to be in baseball employment are concurrently not eligible for the Hall of Fame. They could rescind that policy in the next 5 minutes.
We're talking with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Let's talk a little current baseball here. Been a busy offseason for the hometown team. Dave Dombrowski making several moves. Bob, is there something in Dombrowski's personality, his character, that makes him more inclined to the bold move than perhaps Ben Cherington was?
I think one thing is he doesn't have any emotional attachment to the minor league team. The players. when you're in charge of a major league team and farm system and Ben was and then the general manager, and you sign players, you have a proprietary interest in their advancement because you feel that a loyalty to them. And Dave Dombrowski comes in from the outside with no attachment, no sentiment involved. And I think that may have something to do with his willingness to trade the prospects that he did in order to get make the other move. And then in terms of signing Price, we went through this whole scenario last year about it without an ace, and everyone swore that it was found out it wasn't a good idea. And so that was an easy call. But he's not done necessarily in terms of trading. We shall see.
Let's talk about the Celtics. My goodness, so much fun watching that game on Friday night. Are you enjoying this young Celtics team?
Oh, boy, am I ever. And I'm going to go to the game tonight and looking forward to it. Because, well, one thing, they're living out one-third of the way through the season. And they are literally one-third of the way through the season. It's working out the way I thought it could. I can't say that way I thought it would, because that would be pompous and pretentious. I had no idea if it would. But my feeling was that if it all materialized the way I thought it could, that they would have a team that would feature no useless players, not one, and useful players, no stars, but a team that could play together and have different people doing different things each night and would be able to win 45 to 48 games. They're on pace to do that. And I'm very gratified about that. So that would be very good. They are. There's a buzz around here, Rich. I don't know what's seeping up to your neck of the woods, but there's a buzz. Friday night's game had a tremendous atmosphere. In addition to which, it had the highest rating, I'm told, of any local telecast in 20 years, which includes the season they won the championship in 07-08. So people are becoming interested in and are liking this team, as they should. They have an occasional clunker, but they generally play hard and give you your money's worth, and they're worth rooting for. And so, yes, it's been a very positive season so far.
How much of the credit goes to Brad Stevens for this?
Well, a lot. But Danny's roster assemblage, A, and Brad Stevens' coaching. Everywhere you go, people sing his praises. The rest of the league thinks he's wonderful. Let me assure you that if he were ever, you know, available, were he available right now in the open market of coaching, it would be lining up from here to Kodiak, Alaska. He has solidified his reputation in 2+ years in Boston. As his coaching life, for as long as he wants it, is whether it's here or back in college or another team, he's set for life. People love him.
Bob, give us some historical perspective, if you can, on Steph Curry and what we're witnessing now, still fairly early in his career, but how do you rank him among the great shooters that you've seen?
He's best. And best, Ray Allen was a standard of great excellence that we held and revered. Ray was a curl, come off the curl, catch and shoot, as we say, amazingly accurate player. Thus, he could come down on a fast break, pull up off the dribble and drill a three in rhythm as well as anyone I've ever seen. And that's still true. What makes Steph Curry different and therefore better than anyone we've ever known is the full combination of skill, which includes accuracy from middle range on, and the ability to get the shot off at will, covered or uncovered. His hand speed as he goes into a crossover dribble, and his body agility to create the space he wants and shoot contested from distances up to 28 or 30 feet is the greatest this game has ever seen. There has never been anyone else that can do it as well as he's done it. So in that sense, and I think I'm pretty much in a big group of people who believe this. He's special. And so enjoy him. You're looking at history.
We lost one of the all-time greats recently. For anybody who doesn't remember him, what can you tell us about Dolph Schayes?
Dolph Schayes was the greatest forward of the first 10 or 12 years of the league, from 1946 until, say, 58 or 9. In his 12 years, he was first or second team all-league. That's all you probably need to know. in terms of his stature within the group. His game was not like anybody's today, since it featured a two-hand set, which he could get off with a great jab step, and he had ability to launch it from high over his head as well as from the chest range. He could play inside, of course, at 6'8", and he could really, really go to the basket with authority. And he was impossible to guard, so much so that he had far more free throws made than baskets, which wasn't unique to him, but was certainly something was a calling card more of players of that era. But no one did it any better than he did. And on top of which, he was a fierce rebounder. He averaged 19 points and like 12 or 13 rebounds a game for his career. Led them to their only championship, them being the Syracuse Nationals in 1955. And then finally, beloved, a truly wonderful sweetheart man. And also sired a player who played for 18 years, Danny Chase.
Bob, before we let you go, we always like to ask a little music question of you. So here we are, smack dab in the middle of the holiday season. What's the greatest Christmas song ever?
I think it's, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. From the 1944 movie, Meet Me in St. Louis, the big league done by Judy Garland, that version stands the test of time, as does Sinatra's. Those are the two best versions of that song. I don't think there's much doubt about that. That's the best secular Christmas song. I think the best Christmas hymn is O Holy Night. I remember being moved by that when I was 6 or 7 years of age in St. Joseph's School in East Sherman Avenue in Trenton, New Jersey. I still get the little hairs up on the back of my neck on Christmas Eve when you go to Mass and that you hear that song. And I'm telling you, O Holy Night is that's the greatest hymn, and at least as far as this Catholic will tell you. Someone else may have another opinion.
I'm with you on both of those, and especially the original lyrics for Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which were not as rosy and cheery as the more popular versions later on.
Oh, not at all. I hate it when they feel the need to update lyrics, because songs are written in a time and place. And I hate it when – it's like when somebody changed the lyrics to I Can't Get Started. Don't do that. Metro Goldwyn asked me to star. That was written in 1936, and that's when the song has the feel of anyway. Well, as usual, Rich, we're on the same page.
Exactly. Great minds think alike, or at least one great mind, and then me talking to one great mind, which is good for me. Bob, always a delight talking with you, my friend. Thank you so much, and hope you and Elaine and your family have a wonderful Christmas.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
It's Bob Ryan on Downtown 17 after 5 o'clock here.